Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life.
Good morning, Hat.
Oh, it's not. Morning is not my thing. How are you?
Pretty well. This is, I reckon we've probably done a handful, less than a handful of morning pods. So we are not wine drinking podcasters.
Yes.
Are not a morning person.
Really, I'm not a morning person, and I'm on the coffee, thank God.
But yeah, yeah. How is the coffee?
Coffee is very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was wondering if there will ever come a point when we can just all operate on block time so we don't have to worry about time difference.
Yeah.
Why do we have a time difference problem?
Why do we have a time difference? So we have an international guest. Do we introduce that international guest
please
now?
Please do.
Samson Mao, how are you going, buddy?
I'm doing well. Are you guys?
Yeah, well, I'm fine.
I mean, I'll be good, mate. I'm happy to meet you and happy to have the chat. But as I say, I'm not a great morning guy, so I'll try my best.
I'm not a morning guy either, so I feel you.
Yeah. Cool. Firstly, thank you for giving us the time on your Saturday afternoon. That's very generous of you. I'll put the background into this of how we actually got you. So I messaged you, I think, maybe a year ago just to say, hey, you know, if you're keen, come on the pod. And you just didn't see the pod, see the message at all. And then I think there was a post, I did some post, and you sent me, which was, again, very generous, a Jade. So you obviously liked some comment that I made, and then you went to my DM, I think, to say, here you go. And then you went, oh, fuck, didn't see that. Happy to come on the pod. So, yeah, thanks, man.
What are you? You must be into thousands now, right?
Thousands of DMs? Or
DMs, absolutely, but podcasts as well.
I don't know. I've lost track. But, yeah, the DMs, my state of DMs is pretty bad. You kind of get lucky if I can respond because I keep getting new ones and it bumps it all down. So, like, this morning I was talking to this guy, Michael. He wants to, like, do something with us in Prague. And I just like went to DM him and I saw there's like a message from 2 years ago I didn't read or respond to him for. So I feel really bad when that happens, but yeah.
Oh, it'd be hard to keep up, I suppose. I get one DM a month, so that's...
From me.
From you, yeah.
let's just start there. How do you prioritize? You must be, you're involved in so many different things.
Yeah.
How are you prioritizing what you're involved in and what excites you and like how do you manage all of that?
Well, generally, I guess things get prioritized by default, right? Things become urgent and then they rise to the top, or someone from my team will say, hey, this is really important, deal with it. And then it becomes high priority. But generally, like, it's about what is important for the current thing, right? So if we're working on nation state stuff, then we're probably focusing on a particular region or country at a particular time. So that gets a lot of attention and then it goes on the back burner as we wait for things to change and develop and then the next one comes up. So generally that's how it works.
So how is that? So the rest of us are, I guess we're trying to orange pill our friends and our uncles and you're orange pilling nation states. What happened there, mate? Like how has that all come about? And was that the original intention, or is this just where you've just naturally got to there?
Yeah, I have no idea how it happened. It just sort of did one day. And I guess it started from El Salvador. So Jack Mallers was there doing something at Bitcoin Beach with Strike. And then, you know, he pulled me in and said, you know, I'm talking to the president here and, you know, we want Blockstream and you involved. So I kind of got pulled in there. And then I guess it just kind of progressed from there. And people seem to think that we are the nation state Bitcoin company and they bring us opportunities and people to talk to and set up meetings. And we just kind of went along with the flow. And now we are kind of focused on pretty much that.
Well, is that a fair assessment though? Like, is that not the intention of Gen 3?
Yeah, that is the goal of Gen 3, but I'm just saying it sort of just happened.
Yeah.
And well, that was what, I left Blockstream to start Gen 3 so I could better focus on this, but also work on a wallet focused on Liquid. So it would drive grassroots adoption. It would let us get stablecoin volumes off of the shit chains like Ethereum and Tron, etc. and bring them to a Bitcoin sidechain. So I think that's a good goal. But overall, the mission of Gen 3 is to accelerate Bitcoin adoption. So we can do that in two ways. One is working with governments, politicians from the top-down approach. And then from bottom-up, we want to push this wallet and work with local communities and people on the ground to kind of get more people into Bitcoin.
And how receptive are they? Like with El Salvador, obviously there's a, you know, commitment there, and they're proactive. But like, I mean, how much of is it coming to you, and how much is it you going seeking out them, and what is that conversation like?
Well, generally we depend on people on the ground or Bitcoiners on the ground to make these connections and introductions. So we don't really seek them out, but it's Bitcoiners saying, okay, we want you to meet with this mayor or this president or prime minister. Yep. And then we'll engage and do some calls. But the level of reception varies from region to region. And the understanding of Bitcoin also varies a lot, too. Some of these conversations are very early stage where you're kind of explaining, yeah, Bitcoin is not just something criminals use. It's actually a global money that anybody can access. And then you get into some of the deeper nuance of Bitcoin. But it really is a spectrum of range of understanding of Bitcoin, because we are very early still.
Do you find that, is it quite difficult then to really, I don't want to say dumb it down, but I just did, to make it, to explain it very, very simply when you're still at that stage of, you know, explaining it's not, you know, shadowy supercoders running Bitcoin?
Yeah, I try to keep it, I've always tried to keep it very simple, because at the end of the day, all of the cryptography, how the Bitcoin blockchain works and, you know, UTXOs and all that, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that Bitcoin is simply money. And I use example of digital gold for a long time, but nowadays I just say Bitcoin is money. And that seems to be a way to get newcomers to easily understand it. And I think for governments, it's really about aligning their incentives. Like, first of all, getting them to understand that Bitcoin exists and that they can do things with it in terms of policy or acquiring it as a treasury asset or anything. But getting them to know it exists, that they can use it in some way and it can benefit their country in some way. And then we go deeper down the rabbit hole.
Like, you've got... when you got like a money printing issue, right? So any country out there that's using the US dollar as their proxy currency, when you got a, not to get make this a COVID thing, it's not, but it's but it was a money printing thing during that period. So that obviously, you know, a US government will be picking winners and losers in a situation like that by who the money goes to and who the money doesn't go to. But if you have a country, another country that is using US dollar as a proxy, by default they are getting zero benefit from that. They're only being devalued. How aware are countries at the high level you're working at of that situation, and do they feel that there's a way out, or they're just stuck in that situation, and you know, with an IMF funding and a using the US dollar, and they're just stuck? Is that a question reasonable?
Yeah, I think a lot of countries are starting to realize, but again, it's a very wide range of understanding. I think what really matters is a good understanding of what money is, and then from that understanding, you can easily understand, you can figure out where Bitcoin fits into the grand scheme of things. But like you're alluding to, some of the people that run countries don't really understand it, or they're very high time preference, where they just want money immediately. They want an IMF loan and they want to show that they got money for the country and they're able to do something like build roads or whatever.
Yeah,
and they don't really factor in the longer term consequences of taking that money and incurring more debt. So, I mean, understanding is one thing, but the incentive structure is another thing, because a lot of politicians are very high time preference. So you're just trying to get elected in the next cycle, right? It's like every 4 or 5 years, that is your time frame. And to engineer prosperity for a country for the next 100 years, that's not even on their radar, right? And I think this is why El Salvador is very unique, because you have a president that is actually trying to fix things for the long term, not just for his term and maybe a re-election. But you know, there are going to be sacrifices to accomplish that, right? There's no way you can't really have your cake and eat it too. You can't have those short-term massive benefits and then long-term benefits as well. So it takes someone of a high caliber of mental fortitude to be able to make those hard decisions and really plan for the future.
And if we look at the Bitcoin price in the period that El Salvador have done what they've done, it's not been particularly easy for them yet, I would argue. But the case for what they're doing there is going to be so much easier for you, well, for you, I guess, to promote to other people once there are really, really obvious benefits. Is that what you're waiting for? Is that job going to become a lot easier, do you think?
Well, we could wait and, wait until El Salvador is in the green, in the black. But yeah. I think that wouldn't be the best plan of attack because it could take some time.
Sorry, maybe. I don't mean that you're waiting as I'm waiting for it. I mean more waiting. Right, is that what you're looking forward to, I should say, more?
Well, that'll be a good data point. But we're engaging in a number of countries around the world talking to the next presidents or prime ministers.
Okay.
Because I think that it is a long process. Like, we are so deeply entrenched in Bitcoin knowledge and culture and happenings that we kind of forget there are people in the world that don't even pay attention to it. So to reach the people that are going to be the next generation of leaders in other countries, we have to start now and we have to work ahead, basically put in the work. So we went to Mexico. We started laying groundwork, meeting with more politicians of different parties so that they can know that they can reach out to us if they want to know more about Bitcoin or if they want to formulate a strategy, because those are the next presidential candidates, right? So if we can get to them before, then it's more likely that they'll take Bitcoin seriously, because once they're president, it's going to be difficult to get time with them and FaceTime.
Have you come across a politician or politicians that you've actually been quite surprised that how receptive they are to, I guess, the idea of low time preference, like when they are just kicking the can? I mean, that's the model, kicking the can down the road. Have you actually come across someone or people that you've gone, shit, that they get it or they will get it?
Yeah, there are definitely some. Some people are kind of dismissive, but then, of course, once in a while you come in contact with someone that seems to get it. They may not get it 100%, but they do get it. RFK is one of those that seems to really get it. And his message is basically very much on point. So I'm excited if he can become the next president of the US. That's huge.
Even to have somebody in the conversation talking about these ideas is brings it into the wider sort of general consciousness as well, right?
Well, that's the thing. Like, as I've tweeted before, that Bitcoin is becoming a key part of political discourse, and we just keep seeing it time and time again. So as politicians perceive it to be a key part of political discourse, it will just become even more so a part of political discourse. So you have to be able to talk about it, right? It's a new technology. It's a new form of money, and it is changing the world very rapidly. So I think you cannot campaign to be a leader of a country without understanding this thing that's coming. It's almost like, ignoring the internet when the internet is coming. And I'm sure that did happen in the past, but in this day and age, information spreads far more rapidly and people can understand if you have an understanding of the greater picture or not.
And I guess for the rest, so our situation is like, we sort of, well, I was very much a sort of Bitcoin loner, found Brendo, he's a neighbor, we kind of started discussing about it, and it's great, and then we went along to meetups, and then that becomes great, right? So the social impact of that, but at your level, where you're actually, it's all very well as being behind our screens, but when you're actually in the room, shaking hands, making eye contact, having a real conversation with a person, like, how important is that? Like, what's the difference there?
I think it's very important. And I think this is why meetups are important too. So you can cross-pollinate, share ideas, and create alliances and relationships. But for us to meet politicians, I think it's good for them because they know that, these guys are not crazy wizards dressed up in hats and dancing on a stage. It's
a
real
a fan,
person.
You weren't a
fan. Not my thing. But it lets them know that there are real people building companies on this, right? There are companies are solely focused on Bitcoin technology, bringing access to Bitcoin, financial freedom, and building real valuable enterprises. So I think it's important and it's powerful. And sometimes when you meet them, I think it's a bit more disarming. Like they're more open to asking questions that they may not want to ask because you're having a conversation. So I did meet with one politician and he kind of asked me like, you know, I've been looking at this, the Block Explorer, and I don't understand like what's happening exactly. Like this is the number I'm sending, but what is this? So I explained, you know, that's change and how UTXOs work and things like that. Like people may understand Bitcoin at a high level, but they may not understand the little details and they might be afraid to ask those little details. But I think it's important that we have that opportunity to have those discussions.
Are we going to get to a point where it's not like, I understand that a radio works. I understand that, you know, that a car, I can drive my car, but I don't understand the intricacies of, you know, making a car. Is it going to get to the point where the vast majority of people are not going to have to understand really much? They're just going to use Bitcoin? Or how many of us have to fully understand what's happening?
Well, I think you need some people that do understand it, but I would say the vast majority will just simply transact Bitcoin, just like they don't know how a car works or a combustion engine works.
Yeah,
they may not know how the banking system works and the database structures, network security, but they can go to an ATM and pull cash out of a machine by punching in a PIN. So I guess the answer is just like how much is everyone? If it's the planet, then I would say, yeah, probably a good portion of the 8 billion people aren't going to know the little details. But I think some people will, because they'll naturally be curious and want to know the inner workings of Bitcoin. And those people are important because they'll probably be the ones that run the nodes and contribute and build on top of the network.
And in terms of education, like El Salvador just now at a grassroots level, like what are you seeing there? Like, there seems to be a focus there on people
my dog just stretched and farted right in our direction.
Yeah, that's not good. So what's needed there for the individuals at the sort of grassroots level and an education perspective?
Well, I think you need people there to give them the opportunity to learn. So there's a number of initiatives. There's Mi Primer Bitcoin, my first Bitcoin. They are working with schools. There's like a number of ways you can learn. You can have these school programs. You could simply have meetups. I think at Bitcoin Beach, they have sessions where they'll teach people. Back when Paxful was still operating, they had their house there and they would hold classes. But it really doesn't matter the exact format, as long as there are people there that are willing to answer questions. I think it helps a lot.
Yeah.
Here's a quick question. How often are you actually home?
I don't know, maybe half the year.
Oh, really? Always on planes, just going here, there, and everywhere.
Well, more than I would like, but I'll take a break after we reach hyper-Bitcoinization.
Yeah. And when is that, Samson?
Yeah.
I would say like the next 5 to 10 years.
Genuinely?
It's not just Bitcoin's growth. It's also the failure of the legacy system, right? So you kind of have two forces pushing towards that. One is people understanding money and people understanding Bitcoin and trying to get Bitcoin. And the other is just the failure of the old system. And that seems to be accelerating month by month as we go on. I mean, if you were going to ask, like, if you're going to ask for a prediction this year, would like a bunch of major banks fail in the US? I would have said no, but here we are. So I think everything just is happening faster than we expected it to.
It kind of can feel very frustrating. But then when you look back with a 12, maybe 24 month horizon, you're like, oh my God, look what's happened in the last 24 months. I agree. I think it's going to be faster than people think. Like, for example, I saw a tweet from a guy the other day. Basically, all he'd done was he'd taken his corporate away day booking for his company, and he'd booked it through, I think, like a booking.com, and got sats back on his purchase with one of the sats back services. And I'm sort of thinking, well, there's a guy just purely operating on his own personal incentives, but we're all going to benefit from that, right? So why would that guy stop doing that? He's not going to stop doing it. All that's going to happen is that other people are going to find that out. And that's just going to increase the speed of everything. Yeah. And so everybody telling one person or two people is just, you know, that is the exponential, right?
Yeah, but I think the more powerful force is not people discovering like that, but by necessity, because you might have people in Lebanon or Argentina that suddenly,
yeah,
just they have no other way and they just start using Bitcoin as our money. So I think these kind of systemic failures will probably drive the adoption a lot faster than satsbacks. But, you know, satsback programs are good too. Well,
do these people, I agree, like I understand the problem, and in some countries it's much more difficult, but will the vast majority of people not find, do you reckon they'll find Bitcoin after they needed Bitcoin? Do you know, like after their value, the majority of their value has been wiped? Some people find it before, but the vast majority find it after. So then it's not going to have such a effect on the network, or?
Yeah, well, this is kind of why we're trying to do what we're doing at Gen 3, which is to get countries to adopt Bitcoin now. Because if you're agreeing with me that hyper-Bitcoinization is a 5 to 10 year time frame event, then you kind of need to start now, right? You need to onboard billions of people and have them understand how to transact Bitcoin, what is the real Bitcoin so they don't get scammed, and what are crypto Ponzi's, right? So yeah, there's a huge effort to bring people on board, and it's not easy. Like if you look at Achievo, right? They try to get 6 million people using a Bitcoin wallet, and you know, it was not a straightforward process, and it didn't go that smoothly either. So the sooner that we can get countries to adopt some sort of Bitcoin policy, the better, because they'll be better positioned to have their citizens ready when that time comes. But I guess you hit the nail on the head, which is most people in the world, when I say most, it's like the, you know, 4 or 5 billion people that are not in Bitcoin yet. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to care about it until they need to care about it, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about sound money until everyone cares about sound money.
Well, it's like I saw a tweet recently, which is obviously an old one that someone's retweeted. Butcoin, whoever that is, there isn't a single goddamn thing that Bitcoin can do for retail that Apple Pay doesn't already do 10 times better. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Reply from this guy in Iran, I can't use Apple Pay, PayPal, Visa, Master, or anything like them. I'm from Iran. I can use Bitcoin. What do you have to say? I would love to see what that reply is.
But... yeah, there'd be no reply. That's the problem. There is no reply.
There's no reply.
That,
right?
It's just that's such a singular mindset too. Like, you know, I'm from my backyard, so why do I need Bitcoin?
But the thing is, people don't understand that your backyard changes very rapidly, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly, you may not be able to use Apple Pay one day if you're a trucker in Canada, right? Let's not talk about Iran or anything like that. Like, the government actually has a lot of power, and they can do all sorts of things in centralized systems to cut you out of the financial system if they choose to. That's the problem, right? And this is why Bitcoin exists. And there are always going to be people that don't want to or just refuse to understand that. And you know, we'll deal with that. But I don't think their argument is that convincing. And the knowledge, the pool of knowledge to support why Bitcoin is valuable is growing exponentially, right? We have more and more great reading materials. We have people speaking about this. Alex Gladstein is one such person, like Check Your Financial Privilege. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested to learn about it, there's just so many avenues to do that.
And it's because there are sort of, like, we have this conversation quite regularly, like, it's not that everybody's going to connect with the same, like, one person isn't going to explain it to everyone. It needs many, many, many people, and everybody will connect in the way that they connect. But the more people that join, the more potential is there for reaching everyone, right?
Yeah. Well, you'll often say, if you do want to orange pill or talk to someone about it, don't talk about why it's good for you. Find out why it's important to them, which is a really good point.
Yeah, it took me years and years to work out because I'm stupid, but yeah, like I wanted to tell people what was important to me, but it's not relevant. It's what's important to them that's relevant, and you just have to try and meet them where they are. It's just trying to work out where they are and getting better with your questioning in order to work out what they actually care about.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like, people often ask me, like, for Gen 3, what is the playbook for nation state adoption? And I tell them there is no playbook. Mm-hmm. We go and we talk to the politicians. We see what's important to them. Just like you're saying, Hats, like, we need to know what they care about. We can't just say Bitcoin's going to save you. It will, but that's not the right way to open up the conversation. Hopefully. So, you know, for example, in Costa Rica, we went there with a rough idea of what we thought could be interesting, and we verified that that's true. Like, they're interested in mining. There's already public-private partnerships starting to mine Bitcoin in Costa Rica. What they really need to do is, I think, double their energy production, their hydro production capacity. And that's something Bitcoin could help with. You could create some programs to incentivize mining companies to build the hydro dams with you, because their goal is to double hydro output. So you really have to see what they care about, what their pressing issues are, and how Bitcoin can help with that. And that is the most effective way to get Bitcoin adoption.
So you must be doing, obviously, a fair bit of research on each place you visit before you go there to sort of to get the right angle to say, well, this is what you could potentially do that will benefit you most.
Yeah, it's a mix. We have a really good team at Gen3, and we do research ahead of time. And then we have the local contacts in the Bitcoin community that also advise us what they're interested in and what could be done too. So it's a mix of both.
So who does most of the conversations, or has most of the conversations with the politicians? Is it you? Is it a few of you?
I think it's all of us. We usually just jump on calls together.
And
it depends who went there in person, and it's whatever we have, we'll use.
Yeah.
Do you, if you don't mind me asking, do you personally live on it? You've been in and around Bitcoin for a long time. And there must have been a time where where the switch happened. You're like, oh, this isn't going away. This is going to be my future. I'm going to work in this, whatever. So do you personally live on a Bitcoin standard, or do you recommend people try to live on a Bitcoin standard, or do you think we still need to operate in two worlds for the time being?
Well, I would say you have to do what's right for you. There is no right or wrong answer, right? If you don't have a lot of obligations, you can fully live all in Bitcoin, right? And just sell when you need to. But if you have other obligations, if you have a family, you know, you may not have that luxury. So it really varies from person to person.
And in terms of, I mean, you're in the States.
I'm in Canada.
No, Canada.
Oh, excuse me, sorry. But in terms of...
Hey, I don't know something you don't know.
Sorry, yeah. Excuse me, that's my mistake. But in terms of the privileged Western world, right, how concerned are you? Like, obviously, there are huge opportunities in the developing world, and the ones who can get on board sooner, great. But in terms of the negative sides in the developed world, how concerned are you there?
Sorry, the negatives side
the States, Canada, you know, we're in Australia, UK, the Western Europe, like there's going to be a huge change coming down the pipe for people in these countries. And we're not ready. I don't think we're ready for it at all. So how concerned are you for the country that you live in, or, you know, a place like we're living in?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Well, let's just take Canada as an example. So Canada has done a really great job of screwing itself over. I think we're competing with Europe, but you know, we sold off all our gold. We have a lot of very bad policy, and Bitcoin is just not a real topic. I mean, we had one politician, Pierre Polyev. He's the head of the Conservative Party and the opposition. He was talking about Bitcoin before. So, you know, if he becomes the next PM of Canada, it could be very interesting, because he talks often about sound money, good fiscal policy, etc. So even if he didn't know about Bitcoin, he's on point and his thinking is correct. But I think a lot of Western countries, they're just really doing stupid things. Like they're trying to defend what they have and put forth what they think are regulations that will protect the status quo or protect existing systems, but that's really not how it works. And what you end up doing is driving people away from those countries. So people will leave. They'll leave Canada. I think we've had a mass exodus of people from Canada going to all over Central South America. And I think it's the same case in Europe. People are just leaving because they see a hopeless situation. And if you really go and think about things from a first principles point, then you understand it's the people that really matter. You know, like, where does wealth, prosperity, and everything come from? It's about having talented people that will build and work. And if they leave, then it's just a slow, sometimes fast descent into poverty and, you know, despair. So it kind of sorts itself out after time. You know, it's if people leave and those countries start to fail, then they'll figure it out and turn it around, right? But it's difficult to change that the trajectory mid-course, right? They're already on the track downwards and they think that this is the way to go. Although the woke thinking, energy curtailment, like shutting down nuclear plants, stuff like that, I don't think they'll fix things until it becomes really, really bad.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how bad it has to get before people start to change their mind, or the new leaders come through and with different ideas that people can get on board with, I guess.
Mm. You got any more questions, or you want to change tack?
I got one more sort of question. It was more just around the, like, what do you think is this, like, the biggest Trojan horse in Bitcoin right now that people aren't paying attention to, or that's going to onboard a lot of people? Is it just the negatives of the current system or is there a project out there, people, somebody's working on that you think, wow, that's going to be huge, and people are just sleeping on it right now?
I don't think there's any one silver bullet. I think it's all of Bitcoin's network effects that should drive that change and be that Trojan horse. And I think the biggest thing is really just making politicians aware of Bitcoin and how it can help them, because they're just not aware of it, right? So you might have the perfect game theory and the perfect network effects and the perfect Trojan horse, but if they don't know about it, then it can't really take place. So I think what we're doing, trying to educate them on how Bitcoin mining works, how it could benefit them, that is starting to push that Trojan horse in, just by letting them understand that this is something you can take advantage of. It's like, one thing I tell them is, like, even if you don't like Bitcoin, you don't want any Bitcoin, you'd still be irresponsible to not mine Bitcoin and sell it, right? If you want dollars, if you want gold, if you want pesos, whatever, you can have it. But energy is money. So take that energy, get Bitcoin, and sell it and get the thing that you want, right? You might want to just sell it and build hospitals. That's good. Sell it and build roads. That's good too. But it's almost a neglect if you don't do something with it and you just waste that energy.
Yeah. And it's, sorry, follow up if you don't mind. It's, yeah. So I had myself and Brisket, we had a bit of a conversation late at night at Bitcoin Alive in Australia. And,
come to Bitcoin Alive next year.
Oh, definitely. April next year. It might be a having party. So anyway, the guys went for a walk, right? The day after the conference, and there was a kid, there's a nice ocean walk, and there was a kid selling juice or something on this walk. And they bought a juice, and then they're trying to convince the kid to accept the Bitcoin, right? And maybe they just gave the kid some Bitcoin, right?
Which I think they did.
I think they did, right? Yeah. But and then they were sort of saying, well, try and hold it as long as you can. And then we had this sort of late night conversation to say, well, actually, maybe that's the wrong advice. Maybe the advice is here's the Bitcoin, and here's where you can spend the Bitcoin. I'll show you exactly what you can do with it, as you, to your point, like sell your mined Bitcoin or spend your given Bitcoin, whatever it is, because 6 months down the line or 12 months down the line, you don't have to teach them any lesson. They'll learn the lesson for themselves when they go, oh shit, I should have hung on to that Bitcoin. Yeah. You don't have to teach them that. Everybody knows that, will understand that themselves perfectly well. Yeah. So are we going about this the wrong way, saying people should hodl and we should just tell people how to spend it, and then they can learn the lesson all for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it really varies. I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. Like, most people will hodl just because they don't know where to spend it. But if they can then it completes that learning cycle, right? That Bitcoin is money. So, I would try both, but ultimately just see what sticks. There is no perfect solution, because everyone has their own thinking.
Fair enough.
Cool. All right. You ready?
What am I ready for?
Yeah. Changing.
Yeah, go on, please. Go.
All right. Pixelmatic. Are you happy to talk about Pixelmatic? So
yeah,
I looked this up. April 2021, I actually went for a job at Pixelmatic. I had an interview with Commander Chris.
Uh-huh.
Had a good chat. A nice, lovely guy. Obviously, I didn't get the job because I'm sitting here with hats.
But they've got a really sound recruitment team as well.
They must do. So I got the thing. I think it was an email saying, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. So I emailed back. Oh, thanks, Chris. It was great to have a chat. Just can I have some, any kind of feedback? Just, let me know. And then it came back, the email bounced, and it was like it was blocked. So anyway, I'd like some feedback, please, Samson.
Well, Chris left, so maybe you emailed his bounced email. So,
oh, well, there you go. Yeah. All right.
There's your answer.
Maybe I broke him.
What's the story with it? Like, was it Infinite Fleet? Are you still involved there?
Yeah, we're still working on it. We recently took down the servers. We're doing some re-architecturing of the servers. And then we're planning to put it back up. Actually, it's good timing you're asking. We were planning to go up next week and then put it up on a few different stores and open up the closed beta a little bit wider and see how the new server architecture holds up under the stress. But it's still going. We're just going at it slow and steadily.
Yeah, well, definitely looked, I know sort of from 2 years ago to now, a lot of the screenshots, they look pretty bloody good. So you're a gamer then, or you have been?
Yeah, I was a pretty hardcore gamer back in the day playing StarCraft. I was quite competitive. I played Unreal Tournament and Lineage 2 and World of Warcraft.
Just PC, or do you do Xbox or PlayStation as well?
Just PC.
Yeah, right, okay.
You're just constantly trying to find a friend to talk to.
I just want to find
online.
A friend on Xbox, and nobody plays Xbox.
He's desperately trying to get me. I'll do it once there's a proper Bitcoin game on. What was it you play on Xbox? Xbox.
Everything. Golf.
No. But once there's a Bitcoin game, I'll play. I'm in. I mean, I play Thunder games.
Well, there was a game called Light Knight. Remember that one?
Yeah, but they turned Bitcoin into
Solana or something like that. Do you actually have time for games anymore, or not really?
Not really. I mean,
you've actually grown up.
No, I want to play. I might play Diablo 4. I'm not sure yet, but I'm a bit tempted to. But yeah, it's difficult to find time to play games, to sit down and play a game. And I think this is one of the things we're trying to fix with Infinite Fleet, which is make a really nostalgic game that older gamers can play. So the concept of Infinite Fleet is that you're doing real-time, like it's basically StarCraft, real-time strategy combat, but we want to separate the building aspects so you can build offline, maybe in an app, and manage that, like, you know, Supercell's games, Clash of Clans or something like that. And then when you want, you can go into the PC version and experience that cinematic combat and the beautiful, you know, space vistas and things like that. But, you know, you can't really, I don't know about you guys, but you can't really find the time to sit in front of your computer for 6-8 hours like back in the day anymore.
No.
Yeah, it's funny, your time disappears, doesn't it?
Well, and it's all for me now, it's almost like I'm sitting down for a movie. Like I don't watch that many movies because I don't, in my head, I'm like, I'm committing to 2 hours.
Yeah.
And not it's a waste of time, but I could be doing something else.
No, but you can just say
but then I can sit there for 4 hours playing Zelda, so I don't know.
But it's you care about the time, right? That's the thing. That's the scarce resource for you. You care about the thing that is scarce.
Yeah.
Right. And you also you got priorities, right? You're a dad or whatever, and you have to do some dadding.
Yeah. And I can't get my son off the TV. So
true. Is there anything that's concerning you? Like what would be the biggest thing that you're like, oh, we need to address this issue? Or is there a single issue that concerns you in Bitcoin?
Oh, so we're back to Bitcoin now.
Yeah, sorry, man. I can't do the gamer chat.
It always goes back to Bitcoin.
He'll do it.
Yeah, it does. The biggest issue, I'm not sure. I think it's just people get very excited or frustrated with different things, but generally Bitcoin's design is almost perfect. You don't really need to worry too much about things. There were a lot of people worried about ordinals and all those BRC things coming to Bitcoin and causing more congestion, but you know, it's past. It's a fad, and if you've been around long enough, you know it's going to be a fad, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoiners don't really care about those things, so they'll move on. They'll find some other chain, some other very cool project that they can get behind, and they'll go away. I think the most important thing is just pushing for Bitcoin adoption at this point, because we're at a very unique point in time where we're going to see hyper-Bitcoinization. We're going to see the fiat currencies just stop functioning. And I think there is an urgency, and maybe I'm repeating myself, but there's an urgency to get more people into Bitcoin at the nation state level, grassroots level, everywhere. Because when there is a massive change in money, there's a lot of chaos and human suffering. And we can alleviate some of that by getting people into that Bitcoin standard sooner rather than later. And I think this is probably why Greg Foss is really upset. Like, yeah, he sees the imminent collapse of the legacy system, and no one's doing enough to fix it or educate around that. So, yeah, I would say it's about getting more Bitcoiners minted. That's the key.
So if we manage to get, you know, Anthony Albanese, our current Prime Minister, receptive to a conversation, would you come over and have a chat? We all know.
You got a lot of influence in government circles.
Well, it's Australia. Everyone knows everyone. Okay. So I'll get on the boat and give him a sound. Oh, God.
I would do it. I'm cutting down on Bitcoin conferences. I don't commit to them anymore. Yeah. I'll drop by if I'm in the area. So I'm going to Prague next week because there's something nearby so I can justify it. But I basically stopped going to conferences unless there's a really specific reason that I need to go, so that I can free up time to go to countries and meet with, you know, governments and things like that. So there's limited time in the day. You have to pick and choose and prioritize.
Okay, so we got 10 months hats to sort that out for him.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
If you can do that in October after I go to Indonesia, I'm in the area. So it's nice.
Oh, all right. I'll see how the PM's tracking for October.
Is Indonesia conference or what is that? What's happening in Indonesia?
Well, I met with the governor of West Java and there is a conference there. He also invited me to go to visit. So I said, yes, I'll go.
Nice.
Sweet.
But Australia is a Western country. It has the same problems as Canada.
Oh, it totally does.
That's why we need you.
Well, yeah, but I can only do so much.
But we're for, like, Australia and Canada, I think we're there's also energy rich or mineral rich countries. So we have something. There are countries out there that are, you know, maybe just like I'm Scottish. Then we like really it's just like sort of a service industry, banking, you know, maybe a bit of education, tourism. Like there's not real things. So I think I'm concerned for people there, whereas like a Canada and Australia, there's something to fall back. Like if Canada needs to start mining Bitcoin, not wants or chooses to, but needs to, they will be able to. Mm. So there's that to fall back in some countries, but some don't. So I think, there's an absolute urgency, but I don't know. It's hard to get that urgency across without sounding like a crazy person. So it's difficult.
Mm. Yeah, it is difficult. I mean, Canada has so much energy too, and we just run off the water. We don't convert to power and mine Bitcoin, or we sell power really cheap to the US. So it's just we just need better leaders that can do better things with the resources that we have.
Are you staying there? Will you stay?
I'm still here. Yeah. I'm still here. We'll see how it goes. There's always El Salvador if I need to move.
Yeah. True.
Need that on a shirt. There's always El Salvador. That's pretty good. All right, I think we're good, mate. Anything you want to add?
No, but
where would you like if you want people to learn about Jan 3 or whatever? Where's the best place where they can actually start?
We should have our website up next week, but we're on social media. We're on every social media platform: Noster, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. Yeah, but I wanted to add on to your point. Like, if you're serious to help us reach somebody in Australia, then let's do it. Like, everyone can do something, and we're all connected to somebody by 6 degrees. So it's just a matter of putting your head to it and trying to make it happen. But we're all just normal Bitcoiners, normal people. And in the end of the day, it's up to us to change the world. There's no magical anointment and that says, you're going to fix Australia. We just all choose to do it and we do it.
Perfect. All right, mate. Thank you, Samson. Much appreciated again.
All right.
Thanks for taking the time, mate. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thanks, Brendo. Thanks, Hat.
Thanks, buddy.
Hats.
Nah, fuckhead. Just call me fuckhead.